Hello and welcome to Nikon Report, your weekly roundup of all the latest Nikon news and all other photographic announcements that we found interesting. It's Constantine here.
And this is Becky.
And this is 136 issue.
Wow. Amazing. So first up, we have some rebates for US residents. So Nikon USA have launched up to $500 saving on selected Nikon products.
And you know what? There are quite a few products in there. So for the full list, definitely head down to Nikon Rumors website. It's a little indie website that we want to share it with the world so people actually find out about it.
You can probably also find it on the Nikon USA website if you're wondering.
Now, not only United States get the deals, apparently European Union as well as United Kingdom will get their Nikon winter savings. We've mentioned it last week.
That's right.
There's a lot of deals to be had as well. And for those deals, head to our website and have a look how much you can save on all lovely Nikon gear.
Absolutely. And now on to some news about products. We have recommended memory cards for the Nikon Z8 by Alec Griffin.
Yeah, so Alec Griffin did a lot of tests back in the day, and now he updated those tests to the latest memory cards. So definitely have a look at those. And obviously what's interesting to me in those tests is that obviously they're advertising writing reading speeds are not the actual writing read speeds you get inside the cameras themselves.
Indeed.
And to measure that, actually, you need to do a separate test. So you don't put the card into the memory card reader into your laptop, you know. You actually have to measure it a different way.
So to test the camera, he ran each card in the Z8 until its 2 gig buffer was filled, then calculated the time it took to clear the buffer against how much data was written. USB-C read and write speeds were taken on a PC with a USB 3.2 2x2 Angel Bird card reader using an AJA system test with 4 gig file sizes. So there was some thought process put into these tests. He said an important spec to look out for is the sustain speeds. Cards often have a fast cache, but on some cards it's not very big. So once the cache is exhausted, cards run slow, and he tests sustained speeds, which is the thing that we're all looking out for when we buy a memory card.
That's right. So memory cache is really kind of a small bit of memory, which is really, really fast, even faster than the current PCIe formats, you know. So that's, and because it's obviously hugely expensive, so there's not much of it on each memory card.
Yeah.
So if you look at, let's say, his first card, the fastest card, there's Alexa 128, 256, and 512 gigabyte diamond type cards. So USB reading speed is 1700 megabytes per second. USB writing speed is 1617 megabytes per second. But actually, the writing in the camera is 697 megabytes. So almost three times slower. Keep that in mind. And it just tells me as well that unless you're shooting sports at very high frame rate, at very long sequences, regular CF Express cards are pretty good. You don't really need to go for the fastest ones. He also gave us recommendations for 8K video shooters as well, and there are different memory cards in there. So have a look at his article. It's a pretty extensive research as well as tests. So I definitely recommend to have a look at that. Ali Griffin has been doing those tests for years now.
Next up, for some interesting news for you, it seems that the Nikon Z9 camera is going to the moon.
To the moon.
Now, apparently the next generation moon camera was tested in Europe, and it's likely that it is a Nikon Z, probably a Z9, which is in the testing phase to go on the next US moon mission, Artemis 3. The original news was published by the European Space Agency on the 24th of October. If you zoom in on the headline picture, you can see that the lens is a Nikkor Z 40mm f2 and the body size suggests a Z9.
Yeah, from the article, what they say is that the new lunar camera is built from professional off-the-shelf cameras with great sensitivity to light and state-of-the-art lenses. To prepare it for space, the NASA team made several modifications, including adding a blanket for dust and thermal protection, as you can see on the images, temperature range from minus 200 to 120 degrees Celsius on the moon, as well as new set of ergonomic buttons for astronaut wearing gloves in bulky spacesuits. If some of you saw those Nikon cameras back in the day, in the Nikon F3, we had actually one in the shop, the one that went to space. You can see that obviously, astronauts, the space people, they wear those big gloves.
They do.
So the tiny buttons may not work so well. So effectively, you need to design a casing around the camera, almost like an underwater housing, which will have much bigger buttons to allow you to change the settings on it. And obviously, that particular suit to protect it from all the extreme weathers that apparently there's extreme weather in space. Who knew?
Extreme temperatures.
So, you know, could be a blizzard in space. You never know. So yeah, I mean, they are working it, but it looks like, just from the size of the camera, it does look like a Z9.
It does. This won't be Nikon's first trip to space, as you said. We also had the F3 take a trip to space. I wonder if there's any other cameras that we don't know about that have actually been out there.
Well, I know of only two brands that have been to space. It's Nikon and Hasselblad, and NASA has steadily chosen Nikon and Hasselblad gear since Apollo days.
Wow.
It's been quite a while. But the astronauts of the Apollo 11 mission took iconic images of the moon with a Hasselblad camera. And you've seen those shots.
Yes, we have.
You know, apparently they've collected 1,407 shots from four of these cameras.
Amazing.
Back in the day, all on film. Imagine how much it would cost right now. But NASA has the money.
That's right. So they go on to say, while the core of the camera remains the same, the interface and housing keep evolving. One version will fly to the International Space Station for additional testing in the near future. NASA teams have done extensive testing for the three major challenges of space, thermal, vacuum, and radiation effects. On the moon, one added challenge will be the abrasive nature of lunar dust. Last year, the camera was part of a simulated moonwalk with the Jet 3 mission in Arizona, USA.
Yeah, and those shows that we've seen, that's actually in Lanzarote, which has this volcanic sand.
Wow.
So that's where they test the camera. But yeah, I'm sure that a lot of you saw those huge Nikon lenses floating at the space station, you know. So Nikon is not a novice in space travel.
There you go.
Now on to some ZF news. More and more content comes for this indie camera called Nikon ZF that apparently stole our hearts. Someone called the police. What they did is what we wanted to do and never had time. They took all those native Voigtlander lenses for Z mount, full frame, of course, and mounted on Nikon ZF. So you can now see those lenses on those cameras. They also told us in Japanese how good those lenses are and what to look out for.
That's right. Looking at the pictures, the Voigtlander lenses look genuinely perfect on the ZF. They look like they were made for that camera. Look at that 50 F1.
Oh, yes. Beautiful.
Delicious.
Beautiful. And I think it's just one of those lenses that I ought to have, really.
But also look at that 65. I mean, the 65 is a huge lens, but yeah, it doesn't look out of place on the ZF.
That's
with
right.
Its scalloped barrel.
And I think this one is just extended. It's zoomed in quite a bit.
That's
as
right.
Well.
Yes,
so,
it is, yeah.
But again, the advice there is that Voigtlander lenses generally have a very sharp lenses or character lenses. So in terms of this, if you're looking for upper glass, they have 35 f2 and 50 f2. This is a very modern, high coatings, extreme sharpness lenses with very little chromatic aberrations or all sorts of artifacts. So those are great lenses to have, but they also do a really shallow depth field lenses, very wide apertures, like 41.2. Apparently, a lot of people call this two lenses at one. So anything between 1.2 to 2.8, you get this, all those swirls and all this barrel distortion, all sorts of things, like a vintage lens, and then stop down from about F4 to, let's say, F11, F16, you will get the modern performance.
Yes.
So a nice lens to have. And obviously, 50 F1, I think it's an internet darling, really, isn't it? Just want to say internet darling. So just
wanted an excuse to throw that
exactly
in there. It is an internet darling.
But yeah, if you'd like us to do a video like this, definitely do let us know in the comments below.
That's right. And if you'd like to purchase any Voigtlander lenses for your Nikon camera, whether it's F mount or Z mount, Grace Westminster are a stockist.
Apparently, if you bought a ZF from us this month, till the end of the month, you can get 10% off the Voigtlander lenses.
There you go. Now on to some other third-party accessories. We have the Nikon ZF grip. Who is this made by?
It's made by some eBay third-party manufacturer.
Someone 3D
from China. Well, it's not actually. It's aluminium construction.
Yeah.
For the grip, and the plate is Arc Suisse, but those are a wooden-made grips.
Pliers design.
So Pliers design not only have the grip for Nikon ZF, they also have the grips for old film Nikon cameras as well, even for Nikon F. So have a look at this. The price is actually not too bad. I mean, ideally, I probably would like to get a Japan-only Nikon one. They haven't hit eBay yet, but I'm looking forward to hopefully acquiring one if it doesn't cost a fortune. But this is a nice design, and it sits in between the Japan-only Nikon grip and the small rig option.
They come in three finishes, walnut, ebony, and desert ironwood, as it's called.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know how good they are, but the third-party options are finally starting to show up. I'm pretty sure we will see ZF leather cases at some point as well. So I think that's just to do with the popularity of the camera, isn't it?
Look, you can also buy a matching soft shutter release and hot shoe cover.
Machi machi. So I'm really glad that the third-party accessories are finally starting to show up for Nikon ZF, and hopefully we'll see more in the future.
That's right. Speaking of the ZF, we have an article by our mate Tom Hogan, who said the one way the ZF is different. So just to give you a brief excerpt of what Tom has to say, he says, there's the issue of using mirrorless cameras completely silently. This is a key difference between the ZF and the Z8. The Z8 has a stacked image sensor with a 1/270th effective electronic shutter. The ZF is still using the older Z6 image sensor, which is not stacked and has a far slower 1/15th effective electronic shutter. What that means is that the rolling shutter artifacts on the ZF can be problematic when the camera is used in silent mode. This is not true of the Z8, which operates pretty much like a camera with a mechanical shutter when silent. Moreover, in artificial light, the slower ZF sensor more easily produces banding. And unlike the Z8, it has no way to synchronize the electronic shutter to the light frequency. So for people who want a completely silent camera, the ZF probably isn't the one you want. If you don't mind the mechanical shutter being used, then the ZF is perfectly fine with motion action and response to frequency-based light, as you'd expect.
Let's talk about it.
I think that's a good idea. We do have customers and clients who purchase these cameras for specific low-light, artificial lighting situations, and they have spoken before of banding issues using certain cameras. Mm-hmm. The Z8, I've yet to find completely eliminates it in very specific situations. Mm-hmm. I do have at least two clients who do low-light sort of nightclub-style photography, and they still get banding even with the Z8. So I don't think the Z8 eliminates it entirely, but it's interesting to know that with the ZF, it would cause even more of an issue.
Yeah, but then not only with Nikon ZF, with Z6, Z7, and Generation 2 cameras
of course,
as well.
Yeah.
So let's not forget about those cameras. They still exist and they still carry.
Yeah.
So in terms of this, while Z8 and Z9 does allow for a little bit of the refresh rate frequency adjustments, yes, Nikon ZF doesn't. What I can see Nikon ZF as a street photography camera, and obviously maybe some people who just do street photography, they would want to use this camera in the full silent mode. So that way you take a shot, no one notices it. It doesn't make any sound whatsoever. Now, you have 15ths of a second. Mm-hmm. I've done some street photography with Nikon Z6.
Yeah.
You've done as well.
Yeah.
I don't think we've seen a lot of difference in that respect. So in terms of this, I personally think that it's not a big of an issue. However, maybe if you have someone running, or let's say, again, if you're talking about, let's say, trains passing by and things like this, you may get one of those. But I would say it's not a slow readout whatsoever, and it's pretty usable. Again, if you need this, then maybe ZA is a better camera. But overall, I think smaller camera for street photography is actually a better option.
Right. And when he talks about rolling shutter artifacts, are we specifically talking about creating
wobbles?
Because that's also an issue with an electronic shutter sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you see, because the readout from the Z8 sensor is a bit faster.
Yes.
So it's not a global shutter, but it is faster. So, you know, that's the reason for that.
Yeah. So that's another artifact that you might need to look out for. Again, in those situations, you are better off with a mechanical shutter. Now, for anyone who wants to dive deeper into the subject of electronic shutter artifacts, Simon Stafford actually wrote an article about this in a previous issue of the Nikon Owner magazine. We're talking maybe issue 72 or 71 thereabouts. So if you are a subscriber, you can access all of the back issues using your online account. And he dives into why this is and how it can be fixed and the certain situations in which DSLR is going to solve the problem over mirrorless. So very, very interesting that Tom has brought this up. And although, as we say, it's not necessarily a deal breaker for most people, it is good that there is someone writing about these instances on the internet.
Yes, and it's obviously, to summarize Tom's article, it's what he's saying is that a £2,000 camera is not a £4,000 camera. So it may not have the things that a 4,000-pound camera has.
Smart.
But in the future, I can predict that 2,000-pound camera will have what Zedek has.
At some point.
If we give it a bit more time.
That's right. Thank you, Tom, for writing that article. Moving on, Nikon presents the Vertical Movie Award 2024. They have now begun accepting submissions.
For all of you, the vertical cinematographers who live in Japan only, you can send your videos to them. And the final results will be shown at CP Plus 2024 at Nikon booth, which will be held on 22nd of February 2024. It's the big show in Japan where all the camera manufacturers come in. So your vertical videography can be there.
So if you do live in Japan, the theme for you is called Show Your True Colors, and they are looking for works that express the theme of your color from the individuality, uniqueness, and new perspective of each photographer. Do you think if we don't live in Japan, but we have a friend that lives in Japan and we can register, can we submit a vertical video, or you have to be a resident in Japan to submit?
Well, I think you have to live in Japan to do that.
I see.
You know, but if you have a mate in Japan, maybe he can get us those, you know, ZF grips.
Yes,
that would be useful.
That would be handy.
But yeah, if you're into vertical videography, it's a very, very specific niche of videography, you know, then definitely, you know, it's worth submitting if you live in Japan.
Now, here's an interesting sort of random question for you, but yeah. I find in this day and age, there are a lot of content creators who are filming in horizontal and making sure that they can edit their videos for vertical orientation. Mm-hmm. I even watched a YouTuber the other day who said, here's my recommendation for this type of shot. You'll have to film in horizontal. And then went, why would anyone normally think of doing that? Because obviously the content that he creates is normally in vertical orientation. So do you think it will now become a thing where people default to vertical orientation, or is horizontal format here to stay?
Well, there's a couple of things. Let's say for us, for our video content creation, two of us shoot horizontally. We can't really squeeze ourselves into a vertical format without huge black bars on top and the bottom.
Yes. You know?
So I think the next thing, which is coming already to other manufacturers, but also hopefully Nikon will step up and do this, is open gate video, where you actually get a readout of a full sensor, which is not 16:9. So that way you don't crop top and the bottom, but you get full recording. And because of that, it would be actually easier then to fit things into the vertical format. If you look at the GoPros, the latest GoPros, they have 8:7 ratio sensors as well. And that allows you not just for stabilizing of the action footage and those action cameras, but also allows you to crop quite freely into the vertical format as well.
Right.
So I think it's a great idea. The problem is now, if you're shooting 16:9 and if you have more than one person, you really have to frame a lot wider to allow for cropping. And in that case, it's probably much easier just to shoot vertically when you need to and then shoot horizontally. But you're right, I think it's going to come in the future, and definitely we as a creators now need to create a lot more content for all sorts of platforms, and filming for each platform individually, it just doesn't make sense. So we have to kind of film everything at once, and then we'll get out at the same time to all platforms without too much editing work for each individual platform.
Indeed. You know what would solve it is having a vertical camera on each speaker. Like that would be, you know, then when one person speaks, you have them and one, and that's the only way that you could edit it. You'd literally have to have three cameras rolling, possibly even four, so that you can catch all the angles. Wow.
Yeah, you need a budget for that.
You need a budget for that, and you need someone to edit it together.
But if you're looking at Nikon system, actually, if you look at secondhand Z6s, that would be a good addition.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been filming on our Z6s pretty much till now, and we will be switching to Nikon ZF. But for video work, and as a, you know, as a second camera, as a B-roll camera, it's pretty useful. So yeah, I think it's definitely a possibility. What I want to ask you as well, Becky, is do you really want to show your true colors?
No. Who wants to show their true colors?
All right, on to third-party news. Company Astro Hori released a 28mm f/13 2x macro probe lens for Nikon Z as well as F mount. So it's officially been announced. It's one of those strange looking lenses with a big long barrel, which also has a built-in lights in it.
Excellent. Can we get one to test out? Because I really want to use one of these lenses. I want to actually see what it's like. Okay, so the beauty of a telescopic macro with an aperture as small as f/13 that reproduces images double that of life size and with built-in LED means that challenges that one faces when doing, let's say, traditional macro work with a standard macro lens are eliminated. The fact that you can get so close, the fact that it's double life size, so if your subject is very tiny, it will be projected double the size of the subject onto the image sensor. And the lighting all kind of handles these issues that we deal with when taking macro photography out in the field.
Yeah, and you know what? This lens is also waterproof to a degree, so you can put it inside the water and take shot as well, which is really good. Videographers have been using those lenses for quite some time, especially for all those kind of food photo, you know, the food ads and everything. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a way to use those lenses creatively. And I think, yes, Becky, we should really try this one out because I don't have experience with that. If you have experience with any of these type of lenses, do let us know in the comments below.
That's right. And now onto your reviews. So we have the Nikon ZF review by ePhotoZine, and they liked it.
Yeah, they gave it 4.5 stars out of 5. The only thing that they didn't like is different operation style may not suit everyone. So they didn't like the control, or they say it may not appeal to every photographer out there.
That's right. They said, whilst very similar results may well be available from, say, the Z6 II at a slightly lower price, the difference is slight and the form factor of the ZF is likely to be the deciding factor. It has unique retro appeal, is as solid as any FM2 lookalike is expected to be, and produces exceptionally fine results. It handles well. And if that style and handling suits the photographer, then it hits the spot and should give good service for many years, adding some attractive patina along the way as time passes by.
It's all about patina, Becky.
It is. That's the important thing. So they like the features, the handling, the performance was 5 out of 5, which is pretty good.
It's a very modern camera. It's a very modern camera in a retro-styled case, in a way, you know. So the amount of technology in this camera is amazing.
That's right. And they said it is highly recommended, an exciting blend of superb retro styling, excellent handling, and impeccable performance. So if you were on the fence before, then this might sway you either way.
Exactly. But we always say, try the camera before you buy. And in this particular case, as they say, the controls may not be suitable for every photographer out there. So do try and see if you like it. I like it. I enjoy it very much. I think it's, for me, like, I don't know, I thought I'm not going to like this camera.
Mm.
And then I did.
Yes. And the rest is history.
Exactly. Now, there's also a review of a planner by Chris Frost. He says that Nikon made portrait lens to end all portrait lenses. It's got almost perfect optics.
What an interesting accolade that is. Then we have a 600 6.3 field test. This lens is ridiculous by Dwayne Payton.
Is it a good thing or bad thing? What do you think?
I think it's if it's an American ridiculous, then we're saying good.
Okay.
Yeah. If it was English, then ridiculous is bad.
That's why I'm asking while I'm sipping my Earl Grey.
And then we also have the 600 PF tests and comparisons. Sharpness! Exclam. AF speed, bokeh, VR, focus breathing, and more by Steve Perry.
Wow.
All the exclams.
Much excite. Now, Steve Perry also has a video on Z9 latest firmware version 4.1. You know, the one with the bird recognition and all this, you know. So what he is actually wants to tell you is he spent some time with it, about 20 years since it came out, and he wants to share what is good, bad, and ugly about it. But he also compares the Z9 latest firmware performance with a Sony A1 camera.
Ooh.
And he also talks about his settings for wildlife photography. So very, very useful video. Get your Z9s out, switch on the menus, and watch the video.
And that was your weekend read and watch. And that's all we've got for you today.
Yeah, exactly. That's a wrap. Thanks for joining us this week.
Yes, thank you very much for watching and or listening. Please give us a like and a subscribe if you're on the YouTube. And if you're listening on a podcast platform, then a review, a follow, a share us with your friends, all that good stuff.
That's right, on all your high definition devices. Just a couple of platforms to throw in. There's Apple Podcasts, there's Spotify, Amazon Music, even YouTube Music apparently now has a podcast section. We are there ready to fill your ears. We also want to fill your eyes with our imagery on social platforms like Instagram.
You can find us on the gram at Rebecca_Danese. The shop is at Nikon at Grays.
And me at Konstantin Kochkin. We will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.